Makom ha'idon hazeh, and the place of this enjoyment, be'emes hu olam haba, is in truth the world to come. Ki hu anivra b'chana, because that was created with the preparation, hamitztareches l'davar hazeh, that is necessary for this matter. Ach haderech kedei lagia el machov zchavzeinu zeh, however, the path via which to get to this place that we wish to, zehu ha'olam, is through this world. Vu mash'amru zechon levracha, and this is what our sages have taught us. Olam hazeh dom lefrozdor, this world is comparable to a corridor, ifnei olam haba, in front of the world to come. One of the greatest Amoraim who lived was Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas. Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas was known as Mara de Eretz Yisrael. He was known as the master, the Torah teacher for his generation. To his address, to his home came all questions, all issues. He was known as a sage. He was known as a saint. However, despite the fact that he was a very great tzaddik, he also suffered. He suffered poverty, illness, disease. The Gemara describes his life, the chikile milsatuvi, he had a difficult, austere life. And to give us an illustration of what his life was like, the Gemara gives us an example, a day in the life of Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas. One day, Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas went for a medical procedure, and when he came home, he found a bare cupboard. But a bare cupboard meant nothing to eat. He reached in, the only thing he could find was a clove of garlic. He bit into this clove of garlic and passed out from malnourishment. Very quickly, the word spread. The great Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas is unconscious. Osti lishuli bei Rabbanon, the rabbis came to visit to see what was happening, what was his state. In a state of unconsciousness, first Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas began crying, then he began laughing, then a beam of light emanated from his head. Ki isar, when he awoke, the rabbis who had gathered around his bed asked him, "My high, what was the meaning of this? The crying, the laughing, the beam of light?" And he said, "Yoshev imi HaKadosh Baruch Hu." At that time, when I was unconscious, Hashem himself came to visit. And I said to Hashem, "Ad masai et star by alma, Hashem, until when will I suffer in this world? When will my suffering end?" And Hashem said to me, "Elazar b'ni, Elazar my son, nichalach ta'apich la'alma mireisha, is it good for you? Would you like me to turn back the world to its moment of creation? Efshe demishas b'shas demizoni, maybe you'll be born into a time of sustenance." The Marsha, one of the commentaries on the Gemara, explains to us what was going on. Apparently Hashem was offering Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas something unique. Your life is difficult. Your life is too hard. Would you like to start over? Would you like me to find you a different generation, a different time period, put you into a different body, into a different life, and you could start again? And apparently Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas wasn't sure. He didn't know which way to go with this. So he said to Hashem as follows. He said, "Hashem, do I have more years to live, or have I passed the halfway mark? Have I lived half of my life?" Hashem said back, "Yes, you lived half of your life." Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas said, "In Kain lo ba'ina, then don't put me into a different time period. Put me back into my own life." Hashem said, "The reward that's awaiting for you is an estate that's so wide and so vast that there are 13 rivers running through it." Again, the Marsha explains to us, his reward is in the world to come. In the world to come, there are no estates, there are no rivers, there's no physicality. It's a parable, a mushal. Imagine a man in our world who's so wealthy that he owns tracts and tracts of land. He owns such a wide, vast estate that there are rivers, not just one river, but 13 rivers running through his estate. That's a parable to this man's world to come. Such a wide, beautiful, powerful world to come that it's comparable to riches that are almost unimaginable. At which point Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas says to Hashem, "Kule hai vesulo," that's all? Just 13 rivers? And Hashem says back, "If I give you more, what's going to be left for your friends?" Again, the Marsha helps us out by explaining to us this Gemara. When Hashem creates a person, for that person is waiting a portion in the world to come. If they earn it, it's theirs to take. If not, it's left unclaimed. Says Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas, "Don't take from anyone else. Give me those portions of those who haven't earned it." At which point Hashem was entertained by the vikuach, by the back and forth. Hashem touched him on the forehead, and the beam of light emanated. The beam of light came out of his head. And that's the Gemara. And I'd like to ask the obvious question on this Gemara. We're dealing with a great man. We're dealing with a man who gets it. A man who serves his Creator with every ounce of energy. A man who's dedicated to his people, dedicated towards serving Hashem, a great tzaddik. And he's suffering. But he's not suffering lightly. He's suffering acutely. So acutely that the very first thing he says to Hashem is, Ad masai et star, Hashem, when will my suffering end? You'd imagine that a man of his stature had many, many issues, many questions to ask Hashem, but he was so focused on his pain, he was so overwhelmed by it, the first thing he said to Hashem is, when will my pain end? We know that Hashem is more merciful than anyone we could ever think of, ever imagine. Wouldn't you imagine that Hashem's response would have been, okay, Elazar, you're a good man, you've done well, I'll take over from here on in? But that's not Hashem's response. Hashem says back, do you want me to turn back the world to its moment of creation? Maybe you'd be born into a time of sustenance. If I were Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas, I would say to Hashem, don't turn back the world to its moment of creation. Don't find me a different generation. How about a cup of coffee and a tuna fish sandwich? He's not asking for luxuries. He's not asking for wealth. Basic sustenance. The question is, why didn't Hashem just say, okay? Why did Hashem say, I'll find you a different generation, this rather perplexing concept? Why didn't Hashem just say, I'll take over from here on in, you won't suffer anymore? And I believe when we focus on this question, and hopefully the answer to this question, we'll get a fundamental understanding of what life is about. And to understand the answer to this question, I'd like to share with you a parable. Imagine the following. Imagine a very well-known actor gets a call from his agent, and it sounds something like this. Listen, Jack, hey, we got this great script. It's a guaranteed Oscar. I'm going to send it by. I just want you to sign on the deal. The actor gets the script, looks it over. The next day, his agent calls. Jack, we're doing a deal, right? Nope. Jack, what is it? The other actors? We can change them out. I'm not doing it. Jack, what is it? The cash? We can get more cash for the deal. I'm not doing it. Jack, why not? Why not? Why not? The part you have me playing. He's a down and out, a bum. I can't stand the embarrassment. Jack, it's just the part you're playing. We're going to do it, guy, right? I can't stand the whole world seeing me as a luckless down and out. He hangs up the phone. That conversation never happened. Why? Because any actor, as well as anyone going to the theater, understands that there's one criteria for judging the actor. He's given a role to play. He's given a script. The only criteria for judging the actor is, how well did you play your part? This is your role to play. This is your part. How true to it were you? How well did you play it? If his part to play was an idiot savant, then he'll win accolades, he'll win awards. If his part to play was the most successful, glib person on the face of the planet, but he did it poorly, they'll rip him to shreds. The actor is judged by one single question. This was your part to play. How well did you do it? And I believe that that's a fine parable to life. You see, before we were born, Hashem gave each of us a very specific role, a very specific part to play. I didn't choose it. You didn't choose it. But Hashem gives us a very clear directive and a very clear role. And at the end of our days, we're judged by one criteria. How much of me did I become? How much of my greatness, how much of my potential, how much of what I could have been did I end up being? 80%, 60%, 40%. But you see, the standard by which they judge me is the standard of me. The Vilna Gaon explains at the end of our days, each of us stands in front of Hashem and they hold up a picture of a great man, an accomplished individual. And they say to me, why isn't that you? Me, little me? You want me to be that great man? The man who changed himself and changed his generation? And it says in the Vilna Gaon, the most difficult, painful words a human being will ever hear are the words, that is you. That is you had you used your potential, had you used your strength, had you used your talents. But you see, the picture is a picture of me. Based on my generation, based on my abilities, the question they ask me is, how much of me did I become? And this understanding is pivotal to understanding life. Not a human being I know woke up in the morning and said, Hashem, I think you should create me with 180 IQ, brilliant, insightful. No, Hashem, making an 80 IQ, kind of daft and slow. You know, it'd be easier to go about life that way. We don't get to choose our intelligence. We also don't get to choose our physical setting. Hashem, I think you should make me 6'4", big and strong. No, Hashem, make me 4'6", kind of hunched over and weak. As we don't get to choose our intelligence, we don't get to choose our physical settings, and much of our personality and temperament, we don't get to choose either. Daniel Goleman wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence. In it, he writes about a study that shows that at 22 months of age, they can determine the nature of the baby. Timid or bold, introverted or extroverted. The very nature of the child is hardwired at birth. Now you can grow and you can expand, but a certain personality, a certain temperament, a certain skill set is given to you at birth. You don't choose it, you don't decide, it's given to you, and that is the ideal stage setting for you. Like an actor on a stage, I'm given a very exact role, and I'm giving all of the trappings, all of the stage settings that I need to accomplish that role. And I'm here to play my part, and I'm judged by that criteria. This was your role, how well did you play it? And this concept, I believe, is fundamental to making sense out of life. You'll excuse my saying it this way, but it's the mantra of the high school girl. It's not fair, right? How come she has so many friends, and she's so pretty, and such good clothes, and her parents are so nice to her? It's just not fair. And would you like to know that she is correct? It is not fair. Some people have a very easy time of this thing called life. Some people have a very easy time making friends, being able and skilled in the ways of the world, and some people aren't. And if you sincerely believe that Hashem created us, put us here, and this is the end-all and the be-all of life, then you're right, it's not fair. If the criteria for judging me was how well I did in this world, how much money I made, how popular I was, and how much fame and fortune I acquired, then it would not be fair. But once you understand that life has a much bigger picture to it, life has a much bigger frame, you begin to understand that fair isn't a relevant question. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist and it doesn't take a philosopher to look around and see that people have vastly different lives. I'll give you one example. I know two brothers. One brother, everything he touches turns to gold. Financially, very, very successful. Beautiful marriage. Each child, one more beautiful than the next. And he has a brother. The brother, everything he touches turns to mud. He can't earn a living. His shalom bias, his family situation is on the rocks. His kids, excuse my expression, one's a bigger misery than the other. But here's the point. Two brothers born to the same parents, brought up in the same home, went to the same yeshivas. The same upbringing, living vastly different lives. And don't tell me one's trying and the other one isn't, because they're both trying. But each of them were given different skill sets, different abilities, different temperament, different lives. They're put into a life, and each of them is challenged with one thing. Become the great person you can become. Use your talent, your ability, your skills to the maximum, and you'll be judged by how much of you you became. And this concept goes very, very far. I had a chance to speak at my son's bar mitzvah. And there was one point that I wanted to share with my son. I told him a story. It was a story that was in the news then recently. And it's a story that had a beginning many years before. The story's beginning was when a certain Rabbi Dasburg saw a young fellow, Joachim Yosef, and he realized that Joachim Yosef is close to bar mitzvah age, and Rabbi Dasburg approached him and said, I want to teach you how to lane. Joachim Yosef refused. Rabbi Dasburg said, no, I want to teach you how to lane. I want you to lane. And Joachim Yosef refused. Again and again, Rabbi Dasburg asked. Finally, Joachim Yosef agreed, and Rabbi Dasburg taught him how to lane. The interesting part of the story is that in Auschwitz, in the barracks, Rabbi Dasburg pulled out a very small Sefer Torah, and Joachim Yosef celebrated his bar mitzvah by reading from that small Sefer Torah in front of a quickly gathered minyan. That was his bar mitzvah. After the celebration, Rabbi Dasper said to Yochim Yosef, and now I have a second request. I want you to take this Sefer Torah. Yochim Yosef said, I'm a little boy, how could I do that? Rabbi Dasper said, you don't understand. I'm an old man. I don't think I'm going to make it out of here. I want you to take this Sefer Torah, and I want you to promise me that the whole world hears about it. Rabbi Dasper persevered. In the end, Yochim Yosef agreed, and Yochim Yosef, at 13 years of age, took that Sefer Torah. Yochim Yosef survived. He made it to the displaced persons camp. He made it to Israel. He took that Sefer Torah and put it in a closet in his home where it remained for many, many years. Quite a number of years later, Ilan Ramon, who was the Israeli astronaut who was going up in the Challenger, had a certain question in science. He needed to consult with the world's expert. He made an appointment to meet, and they met in Dr. Yochim Yosef's apartment. After the issue that Ilan Ramon came to discuss was finished, at a certain point the conversation turned to the small Sefer Torah in the closet, and Ilan Ramon asked permission to take it with him on the space shuttle. And in fact he did. He took it with him up on the Challenger, and in fact that Sefer Torah became world famous. Unfortunately, that spaceship exploded on its re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, exploded into flame, and everyone was killed. But that promise made 57 years earlier was fulfilled because the whole world heard about that Sefer Torah. Why did I share that story with my son at his bar mitzvah? To make one particular point. I said to my son as follows, did you choose to be born in the 1990s in the United States of America? Did Yochim Yosef choose to be born in the 1920s in Poland? Neither of you chose your life, but you had better believe that his life was vastly different than yours. But that's the point. Not a one of us gets to choose our intelligence, nor our temperament, nor our skill set, nor the generation into which we're born. Hashem chooses, like a hand in glove, Hashem chooses the exact generation and puts us into it because it fits me perfectly. But not just the generation, the very family and the very birth order, with an older nagging sister, a younger wimpy brother, put into the exact stage setting that's perfect for you, that will allow you to grow, that will allow you to reach your potential to be the perfect challenge of life. And from that vantage point, life fundamentally makes sense. And I believe that that's actually the answer to Rabbi Elazar bar Pardas. You see, great wealth is a tremendous life test. When you wake up in the morning and you're rich, but I mean phenomenally, fantastically rich, and you look out and you say the words, I don't need anyone. I don't need my kids. I don't need my wife. I don't need God. I could buy and sell the city. That sense of independence, of power, is a major life test. And as great wealth is a major life test, so too is poverty. When you don't know how you're going to pay your bills, when you barely scrape together enough money to stop the foreclosure procedures, and you're just about ready to make that payment, and late at night you hit a parked car. You look left, you look right, no one sees. Do you leave your phone number or do you not? That is a major life test. As great wealth is a major life test, so too is poverty. And I believe that's exactly what Hashem was saying to Rabbi Elazar bar Pardas. Do you think by accident that you were born into poverty? Do you think I ran out of money in your generation? It's not by accident, not by circumstances, hand chosen, perfectly designed, crafted for you is poverty because it fits you like a hand in glove. That's what you need. Do you want me to turn back the world to its moment of creation, find you a different generation, find you a different life that doesn't include poverty but still might allow you to reach your level of perfection? Efshir, says Hashem, maybe. Maybe I could find you such a life that will still allow you to be totally challenged. Maybe I can't, because this one has been handcrafted, perfectly designed for you. And I believe that this concept is fundamental, key, and critical to understanding life. That Hashem designs the perfect life for you with all of the trappings and all of the settings. And when you wake up in the morning and you say, ah, drat, if only I had wealth, if only I had skills, if only I were better, if only. All of the if onlys are a lack of understanding how intricate and how involved life is, how carefully Hashem has created a life for you that perfectly suits you, perfectly challenges you, that is the absolute perfect laboratory of growth. And when you understand life from that vantage point, life fundamentally makes sense. There are no challenges vis-a-vis how much money I make compared to the other, how much skill I have compared to anyone else. There's only one challenge. These are my skills. These are my talents. This is my intelligence. How far will I go with it? Will I ford those streams? Will I climb that mountain? And at the end of my day, how much of me will I become? And that's the only standard of measure. That's the only criteria via which I'm judged. And from this standpoint, life is fundamentally logical and equitable. Life is very fair. However, not everyone understands life this way. And many highly intelligent, well-read people don't understand this. And I'd like to give you an example of that. Alan Dershowitz, a Jewish boy who was a good defender of Israel, has written many books. Much of what Alan Dershowitz writes is worth reading. Some of it may not be. In his book, The Vanishing American Jew, there's a segment that is well worth not reading. He describes that he was teaching a course in Harvard. It was a course in comparative religion. Now, he's a law professor. What he's doing teaching a course in comparative religion, I'm not sure. But in any case, the focal point of the course was to analyze the world's religions, to determine which ones got it right, which ones got it wrong. And they did a survey of all the world's religions, Judaism, Buddhism, Catholicism. They went through them all, and they were surveying, determining, weighing one against the other. Okay, at a certain point, someone raised the following observation. Religion is a way of relating to God. Religion is a way of studying God. If we're rating the world's religions, doesn't it behoove us to rate God? So they set out to do just that. Let's give God a rating. How did God do at this thing called creation? Does God get an A, B, C, D? How did he do at this thing called creating man, creating the world? Now, before I spoil the fun and let you know how God did, let me share with you the background. I guess from the learned professor's perspective, there's a balance. You know, there are many things in life that are beautiful. There are sunrises, there are flowers, there's poetry, there's love. There's a lot of nice things going on about the world. On the other hand, there are a lot of rough spots. There's suffering, there's pain, there's poverty, there are widows, there are orphans. There's a balance. On balance, God rates a B minus. B minus, not an F, certainly not an A plus. On balance, God rates a B minus. Okay, it's in the book, Vanishing American Jew. Read the footnotes. Now, here's my point. If I had my druthers and I had the opportunity to rate our learned professor, I would give him a grade. It would not be an A, nor a B, nor a C. I would give him a D for dumb, and I'll explain to you why. You see, imagine for a moment that I were to pull this pen from my pocket. Right? Imagine I pull this pen out and I say to you as follows. See this pen? Right? This is a lousy toothpick. I mean, come on, whoever designed this toothpick did a terrible job. Look, the clicker, you don't need the clicker. Right? This little thing over here to hold it, you don't need that. And here's the worst part. Every time I get it back there in my molars, I get this blue inky thing. I mean, whoever designed this toothpick did a lousy job. Now that would be an example of fallacious thinking, of false thinking. Why? Because before you rate the manufacturer, you have to know what they intended it to do. As a writing implement, it might be well crafted. As a toothpick, it might be lousy. But before you rate Bic, you have to know what they intended that object to do. And I claim before you rate the creator of the heavens and the earth on how he did at this thing called creation, you had better have a clear fundamental understanding as to why Hashem made the world. And if you try to rate the creator before you know what his purpose was, before you know why he made the world, before you know why he made man, you're going to come up with some pretty silly theories. So I'd like to share with you a parable, a mushel. A mushel to explain why Hashem created the world and why Hashem created man. Imagine the following. Imagine you're invited to a very exclusive health club. Now, you've never been there before, but you know the basic layout. On the left side is the spa, and on the right side is the gym. Yep. The gym has got all the weightlifting equipment, the Nautilus, the treadmills, everything you need to work out. And the spa has everything you need to just relax. It has a sauna, the steam room, everything you need to just chill. Now, you decide it's been a very rough week. As you head into the health club, you decide you're going right to the spa. But by mistake, instead of turning left, you turn right, and you find yourself in this room. Oh my goodness, what are all these red-faced people, all this grunting and this equipment? I mean, whoever designed this spa did a terrible job. That is a very powerful example. You see, the Mesillas Yesharim explains to us that when Hashem created the world, Hashem created two worlds. There's this world and the world to come, each with its purpose. This world is the gym. We were put into this world to grow, to accomplish, to change the essence of me, and to make myself into a different person. When I'm done my job here, I leave and I go to the spa. That's Olam Haba, that's the world to come, and there I enjoy for eternity what I've accomplished. But two worlds, each with its purpose. This world is the gym, the world to come is the spa. When you understand that, fundamentally life makes sense. But if you don't understand that, then nothing under the sun makes sense at all. You see, if you believe that life ends in the grave, imagine that I, like Elsie the cow, die. When Elsie the cow dies, her nefesh just evaporates. She's no longer there. Imagine for a minute that you and I are like Elsie the cow, and when we die, it's over, done. I'd like to share with you that God would not rate a B minus. God would rate an F. An F for doing a terrible job at creating man. An F for creating so many features in man that doesn't do him any good. Here's an example. Have you ever had a headache? How about a migraine? Who needs it? Who needs a whole thing called pain? Do you know how sophisticated the pain delivery system is? There are receptor cells in the fingertip, an entire neural pathway, an entire processing center of the brain, all for me to say the word ow, and who needs it? And if you tell me, well, pain does some good because it teaches me to avoid, I'd like to share with you, avoidance pain is not processed in the brain. You see, when you step on that nail, the message has to travel so quickly, the neural pathways bring it up to the spine, and they quickly send the message back, move your foot. Avoidance pain is processed in the spine because it has to be almost instant. The debilitating pain, the arthritis that won't let you move out of bed, is processed in the brain, and it does man no good. I walked a man up 3 steps on Yom Kippur. I believe he suffered more pain in those 3 steps than I suffered my entire year. Debilitating rheumatoid arthritis. Why create it? If Hashem is kindly, merciful, and loving, why create pain? But even more profoundly, why create disease? Creating in man such an immune system, a stupefying network that catches everything, yet with gaping holes carefully made in it, and disease states that are perfectly suited to enter those very holes. Why make it? And if you begin studying man, what you quickly understand is that if Hashem created us for our station in this world, if life ended in the grave, then Hashem wouldn't deserve a B minus, Hashem would deserve an F. The Mesillas Yesharim explains to us that one of the most obvious points that a thinking person will come to is that Hashem didn't create us for our station in this world, because if Hashem did that, kaviyochel, Hashem did a terrible job. But once you understand that there are two worlds, once you understand that there's this world and there's the world to come, life fundamentally makes sense. Do I know the answer to every question? No, but the framework for understanding it, I do have. Many, many situations in life are created specifically to be a challenge, to be a challenge to force me to respond. I either transcend or I crumble, but I must respond. I can't sit on the sidelines. Pain, difficulty, life situations that present themselves are not by accident. Hashem runs the world, and Hashem chooses for each of us a very exact, very perfect life setting that challenges us to grow. Once you understand that, fundamentally you understand life. I believe what Hashem was saying to Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas was, this is exactly your stage setting. Poverty is what you need to allow you to reach your stellar heights, to allow you to become the champion that you can become. This is what you need. Do you want me to turn back the world to its moment of creation, find you a different life in which poverty won't be a part, but you'll still be able to reach your potential? Says Hashem, maybe I can and maybe I can't, because I don't know. This has been carefully crafted, handmade for you. And this understanding is the understanding that everything in life is fundamentally fair, because our station in this world isn't that relevant. We are but actors on the stage, given a script, given a role, given talents, abilities, given everything we need to become the great person that I can become. And at the end of my days, they don't hold up a picture of Rav Moshe Feinstein, they don't hold up the Chassam Sofer, they don't hold up a picture of you. They hold up a picture of me. This is the great individual you could have become. How much of you did you become? Based on my talents, my ability, my temperament, the generation into which I was born, the birth order into which I was born, everything taken into account, and this is your life, how did you lead it? What the Mesillas Yesharim is sharing with us is that this perspective fundamentally explains to us life, and fundamentally lets us understand it, but it's not an addendum. The world to come is not something added. The world to come is the reason. This is the gym. The only reason the gym exists is to allow you to grow, to become. All of the challenges of life are relevant only vis-a-vis what you do with them. Do you transcend? Do you crumble? But you're created for a much greater purpose. You're not Elsie the cow. When life is over forever, you're in that spa. This world is but the temporary passing phase. This is but the gym. Who you are forever is based on what you shape yourself into. That's where you'll stay for eternity, based on what you made yourself into.